You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Stugatz, you know I am fascinated by the changes in television and technology and streaming. Metal Arc Media is in the business of trying to capitalize on the need for content, and we're thrilled to be well-positioned at a time that in the last 18 months has gotten so chaotic that I simply, and I'm not sure anyone could have predicted the amount of upheaval that is coming to content because, at least in part, major corporations are taking over some of your favorite content providers and laying people off right and left. And AMC Networks are the latest. They've laid off 20% of U.S. workers as their CEO flees the premises, and I was introduced to AMC by the popularity of The Walking Dead. I did not get into The Walking Dead in any way until season 5 or 6, everyone telling me that it was the most popular show on cable. It just ended here, spoiler alert, with Rick Grimes making his return at the end. Season 11, I think it was, which was about 4 or 5 or 6 seasons too long because it was the same.
I thought it was like season 18 of The Walking Dead.
It was the same story again and again and again, but as viewing habits have changed, I, for example, am stunned that I know nothing about the show Yellowstone, which evidently is the most popular show on cable television. I know it, the same way I didn't know anything about The Walking Dead and AMC as a network. AMC introduced itself to me as a network by having The Walking Dead.
I am told that Yellowstone is a great show, but a show that you have to stay with for the first season because it's boring. It's setting up everything else, but once you get past that first season, it's fantastic.
This is all you really need to know about Yellowstone. Kevin Costner is a cowboy. He lives in Montana.
That's good.
And he's got a ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Chaos ensues.
And like his kids are...
No, it doesn't even matter about the kids. Kevin Costner, cowboy,
there's murder
ranch,
as well, correct?
Chaos ensues.
Sold.
Yeah, there's some murder.
Lots of murder. Very violent, gory, huge show. Like the first episode, there's like helicopter scenes. There's action. There's all sorts of stuff going on. Big, big show. But all you really need to know, Kevin Costner, cowboy, ranch, Montana. Chaos ensues.
Why is there so much murder? Why can't people just leave each other alone?
It is interesting, Billy, because like the homicide rates are at an all-time low over the last like 40 years or something like
really?
That. Yeah, since like the crime spike in the 80s, like violent crime is way down since 40
but
it, years
but
ago,
it's but way up as a content
on
option.
TV, everyone's getting murdered all the time.
I mean, Dateline in 2020, it's all I watch now. I mean, that and FBI, it's Fantastic.
It's not just that, though. The entire podcast industry, like the only things that are ahead of us in the rankings are all murder-based. They're all these amazing murder stories. We wonder why people are running dark in the head every time they get in the car. They're back to the same place of this terrible person. And why did they murder so many people?
Bill, you have a point. I mean, there's lots of essays that have been written about this murder, true crime spike happening with all of our pop culture. But shows like Yellowstone and Game of Thrones and all of these shows where someone's getting killed every week or there is going to be some gruesome murder or death that happens. Yeah, they're extremely popular and they kind of make you think that like that stuff happens all the time to everybody. And then you're like, it's just because Kevin Costner's on a ranch in Montana and there's chaos all around him.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is murder having a moment at Le Batard Show?
I'm looking at the podcast rankings right now. It's Dateline. It's Crime Junkie. It's Murders and Magnolias. It's unbelievable. It's morbid.
Is that one a Chipping Joanna Gaines podcast?
I think so.
Oh.
Stugatz just said it's morbid, and he was naming the podcast.
That was the podcast.
He wasn't saying it wasn't the overarching theme of all of this is morbid. If you want a podcast, check out Morbid.
It's number 7 right now.
There's also a network called the Morbid Network. So there's a network of morbid podcasts.
That is a path that the Gaines haven't traversed yet, right? The murder game, like Murder at Magnolia, whatever it's called. They're like Murder at the Silos.
You think that, that's scary. You think that living in Waco, there would be some sort of crossover opportunity, you're right. They haven't done that yet. Has anyone seen the new Knives Out film yet?
I was going to say is, have we seen how that's about to change? Because Netflix released something a month in theaters that people want a month before they do it on Netflix, and it's done well in the theaters. People have wanted to go early, and this is a new thing that's going to happen as these content companies have to figure out extra revenue streams. Basically, Netflix has taken a thing they knew would be popular, which is the sequel to Knives Out, and before releasing it on their platform, and Netflix subscribers are mad about it, Stugatz. You can't give people something for free and then start changing the thing and telling them that they've got to pay for it. It's one of the reasons that we've been floating at sea for 2 years, because I feared we were going to lose our entire audience if we put them behind a paywall, because you can't give people for free something and then tell them, no, now it costs you money.
I'm not mad that they put it out and I have to spend money on it, because the first Knives Out I saw in theaters twice and it was so good in theater. I would spend $20 to go watch Glass Onion, the sequel, in theaters. But they put it out in theaters for 1 week over Thanksgiving during football season, college football, World Cup, holidays. I got a million things going on. I don't have time to go sit in the movie theater for 2.5 hours. And then people saw the ending, and now it's not going to be on Netflix for another month. A ton of people went and saw it. They know what the ending is, and the makers of the film are like begging people not to spoil it. But now I can't watch it. Like if they had just left it in theaters up until the run-up of the Netflix premiere, you give people a chance to see it and not get it spoiled. But now no one can watch it. So if you're one of the lucky people who had time to see it for the week that it was out, like you know the ending, and no one else is going to be able to see it now for a month.
But it's not even just because you're saying, you got people accustomed to watching things for free. It's not just that people got accustomed to watching things for free. It's that they got accustomed to paying for Netflix, which is not cheap. And they keep raising the prices on Netflix. And so you're in theory providing your customers even less value by releasing a movie in theaters, asking them to pay for it in theaters. And it's kind of funny, the sort of the melding of all the business models, because even you mentioned Yellowstone and AMC. These are cable channels, right? The Yellowstone airs on Paramount Network. And not Paramount Plus, the Paramount Network. And it drew 12 million viewers during its top episode last season. That's a lot for a cable channel. And AMC basically is going to be on the wrong end of. You either have to have a prolific streaming service or a broadcast channel in order to really have anything break through. Because if you're just operating in cable and you're I think AMC Plus is the thing, they're like the 9th or 10th most popular streamer. All those are going to get swallowed. And so you have that combined with Netflix basically saying, we kind of need to go back to old business models because the movie theater can be pretty profitable sometimes. And so they're trying to figure out what exactly the model is.
it's a good correction that you made because Netflix is not free. What I meant was, or what I should have said, is if they're giving you an assortment of things for the price that you are paying, which includes I get to see it first if I'm paying it, and you then start adding on costs after that where you're no longer getting what it is you were getting for the same price. I read a story in the New York Times this week on the front page about a very cheap man who has been tracking shrinkflation for a long time. Shrinkflation is you get a product that you used to get that had a huge bag of chips in it, and now the bag is the same size, but there are fewer chips in it. This is happening all over commerce. Shrinkflation.
Dad. Yeah, we talked about Mickey Aaron chips. That's what he was doing.
No, that's not what he was doing. Mickey Arison, when my father was complaining about the media potato chips that he got for free, that was not the owner of Carnival Cruise Lines and the Heat trying to bilk my father, who was complaining about his free things. Have you guys noticed anywhere? Billy, you strike me as somebody who would notice whether or not you used to buy something at a certain price, and they're trying to disguise on you that you no longer get that thing for the same price. They are changing the value of something that you're used to paying X for.
Well, okay, I've noticed it on a couple things, because this is what I've noticed. The price is going up, and you think, wow, the price is going up, but then you also notice the container that you're being served it in is now smaller than it used to be. Like, I noticed it with milk. Milk is not always all the same size carton anymore. There's smaller cartons that are just slightly smaller. And you have to look at them right next to identical ones and be like, wait a minute. And then you look to see like the milliliters of how many. It's like, this is actually smaller. Like, I'm not crazy. Same thing happens with ice. Like, I used to buy ice, and ice was like a very standard, like 5 pound, 10 pound bag of ice, right? And I knew the price of ice. Like, if I'd go to buy ice because my ice maker was broken, I'd go to buy ice at Publix and it was $1.99. for a 10-pound bag of ice, right? And now that price has gone up, and it's more than that. And then I look, and I realize there's no 5- and 10-pound bags of ice anymore. There's 3- and 7-pound bags of ice. So a 7-pound bag of ice is now worth more than a 10-pound bag of ice used to be. And if I want a 5-pound bag of ice, now they only have 3-pound bags of ice. So they're doing tricky things, where it's not just that you're getting less. The containers that they're selling you stuff in is now smaller than it used to be, but they don't tell you that. You just assume, that's like, correct. This is just the same size it's always been.
It is a combination of supply and demand and supply chain issues, worker
and people
issues.
Being sneaky sneaks.
No, and also, inflation. Yeah. Sneaky, and yeah. Sneaky yeah. Sneaks.
And
sneaky.
Capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Corporate theft.
Right. I mean, and I'm reading this article in the Times that you mentioned, and it's actually legitimately fascinating. This guy apparently gets emails from a whole bunch of enterprising customers that recognize this. So, for example, he references a bag of dog food that discreetly shrank from 50 pounds to 44. A cereal box that switched from giant to family size and grew about an inch taller, but a few ounces lighter. Bottles of detergent that look the same, but the newer ones come with less detergent. Oh.
Did Billy write this article? This is so Billy Goes Neat.
Billy should be the guy that goes around and just checks everyone. No, you should, Bill. Call him out.
I'm not crazy. Like, this is validation that I am, but I'm not.
Billy? We got to get Edgar Dworsky on the program, and you guys can discuss this.
He made me a little sad, as incredibly cheap people do sometimes.
Not cheap. Thrifty. He's vigilant, Dan. I mean, if you don't keep an eye on this thing, it gets out of control. And surely no one's listening to old Edgar, but he's keeping an eye on it.
I appreciate his work. I'm just saying, whenever I see one, there is a show about people being cheap, like reusing toothpaste and stuff. And every time I think I want to see that show, I am mortified by that show.
How does one reuse toothpaste?
Just spit it back into a cup and reuse it. Yes. There are people that are obsessively frugal in a way that is deeply unpleasant. Find the name of the show.
Sounds like something my Depression-era grandpa would do, to be honest. There was also an article in the New York Times this week about a man who can't stop lying. And I thought to myself, I didn't notice a New York Times reporter walking around the studio. But
a feature on me,
fascinating article. Yeah.
Can you guys explain composting to me?
Oh, I used to compost.
So So it's like you basically, as far as I understand
but
it,
will explain
it's like basically any...
Hold on, let
you could have kept going.
You got right in there. You got right in there.
And then you just jumped in.
You were looking something up, and you came right back to the microphone. I mean, that's on you, Winnie.
There was a space there. As far as I can tell.
I was breathing. I was inhaling oxygen.
Go for it.
No,
don't breathe,
I'm looking up Extreme Cheapskates on TLC.
That show's sad. You will find some sad stuff. Explain composting to both Billy and the audience, and I got to think.
Who's explaining it?
It sounds like you just shit in a bucket and keep this shit around for a while.
Well, we didn't compost shit. It was like food scraps, and you put it in this container, and then thank you for the confirmation, Chris. You put it, I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. You put it in a container, and the one we had, you like spin it around, and you put like dirt and mulch in it and stuff with your food scraps. So if like you eat a banana, Billy, and you take the peel off and you put it in there, and then you have all this organic waste, and it becomes really great fertile soil that you can plant stuff in. So we grew so many vegetables with this amazing soil because it had so much nutrients and vitamins in it. And at the same time, you don't throw away any of your food. It just goes back into the yard, into the environment. Now, the dangerous thing is if you have a pet who then digs through the soil and finds like a little like onion peel, and then you got to be like, no, don't eat that. But we grew like a humongous stock of corn because the soil was so rich. It was amazing.
But a composting toilet is the same just with human waste then, right?
I guess I don't know anyone who does that. It doesn't seem as, I don't know. I wouldn't want to like touch that soil.
It's
probably
deeply unappetizing. Yes, it's a different kind of fertilizer with actual human waste in it. I got to imagine, though, Billy, I don't know if this room has noticed the particulars that Billy is talking about. I have to imagine that our audience right now, everyone is saying, wait a minute, I knew that thing I was buying weighed less than it used to. I knew that somebody was ripping me off, but I didn't know how they were ripping me off. Shrinkflation is a thing, and of course corporations would try to gain every advantage over you on trying to disguise the way that they are bilking you or disguise that they're charging you more for the same thing.
Because not everyone's Billy. Most people are me. Most people are Dan. We're not checking. I know it's happening to me. I'm not checking. I'm not getting outraged by it.
I didn't notice right away.
Right.
Like in my own crazy defense, but like I'm the one that goes and like does the grocery shopping. And then like ice is really where I caught on. I was like, wait a minute. Like this used to be 5 and 10. Now this is 3 and 7. And then when I was getting milk, because I'm buying a lot of milk now for my daughter, like I noticed the cartons were different sizes. And I'm like, this is not adding up. So like I hadn't even noticed on things like cereal. But I had noticed on smaller things over a period of time, so I have no idea how long it's even been going on for.
And it's a pretty easy thing to get away with, right? Because you're buying a giant box, and you don't really notice.
You're not going to weigh it.
Right, you're not going to weigh it. And when you open up the box and there's a giant bag of cereal in there, it just looks like a giant bag of cereal. It's not distinguishable from other giant bags of cereal.
The way that the laundry detergent companies are getting me is they're putting the pods now in the child locked bin, and I can't get the thing open. So I have the humongous container of Tide Pods that I can't... Pods, redact the title. They're not paying for this. I have the giant bin of pods that I can't get open, so then I have to buy the bag and just use the ones out of the bag because the child lock keeps me out of the big container. It's bullshit.
You just ask someone.
I'm not going to ask someone. You know how badly I'll get roasted for asking my boyfriend to open a child lock container for me?
Oh, I thought you meant at the store, like they were behind like the safety glass.
No, in my laundry room.
But roasted by your boyfriend?
Oh, it appears that Whittingham has found on the screen there some of these disgusting cheapskates I spoke of.
This is the synopsis for season 3 of Extreme Cheapskates. : Guide to Love. From taking funeral flowers for a date, redoing a bedroom with used hotel sheets, buying thrift store lingerie, or planning a vow renewal on a shoestring budget, Extreme Cheapskates Guide to Love showcases 4 tightwads who've cut love's high costs.
The flowers thing is not.
It's a heavy
crazy
play.
I mean, you
funeral flowers, that's grim.
They're just going to go to waste.
No one knows.
Going to a cemetery and taking someone's flowers?
Well, yeah, but they're out there. Sometimes it's cold weather. They die quickly. I mean, why not get another usage out of them?
Funeral flowers are also like sad arrangements. Yeah. That's not like date.
You spruce them up a little.
The funeral arrangements generally don't connote like, ooh, we're going on a sexy date. They're usually sad little flowers. But again, it depends. If you're going into a funeral home that just had a wake or a service and just taking the leftover flowers versus
fresh flowers.
Going to a cemetery.
Yeah, don't take them from a grave. That's too far.
That's a different story. Mm-hmm.
But that's like when you get married like at a church or whatever, right? You have to buy the flowers and then they just stay behind and like the church or the venue just stays decorated
because no one takes. I always take them.
Really?
I always take them home.
What do you do with them?
I have flowers for like 2 weeks.
Really? Even if it's like a giant like display, you'll take that
home. I'll take it home.
Where's the line? Like what's the
15 pounds.
Really? I know people take the centerpieces home. That's like usually like a big thing.
If it's going to waste, I'm going to put it in my apartment and have a nice centerpiece for a while.
Interesting.
When I was in China, I'm not going to do that one there.
You have to.
No.
The story's not complete unless you do it.
I wasn't with Michael Jordan at this time.
Oh, wow. A second trip to China.
No, just the rare time in China when I wasn't with Michael Jordan. Oh, it was the same trip. I've only been there once. But when I was in China, I legitimately thought of Stugatz because I'm at a strip of land where there is a giant line of people buying flowers and leaving them for Chairman Mao. And it's a giant line and it's huge commerce. And then 7 or 8 hours later, when I walked by, I saw the workers grabbing those flowers and then putting them back in the place that they'd sold them to resell them. The tourists that had left, and I'm like, China, the Stugatz is strong in you.
That's like the rats. That's like the rats at the Panthers game. They sell you rats coming in. You throw them on the ice. They collect the rats. They sell you the same rats the next time you come.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Do they really do that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, they don't 100%. Anymore because they've banned the throwing of rats.
Really?
They banned the throwing of rats. But that used to be a genuine business model. Honestly.
Does the Predators do that with catfish too?
I feel like that probably has a shelf life. Whereas you could legitimately sell people the same plastic rat 120 times over the course of a year. Like, you just got to buy 8,000 units at the start of a year and watch as the profit rolls in. And they're not cheap. Like, they sell you those rats for like $15 or something.
Yeah. And they just collect them at the end. So let me ask you something. Back to the centerpieces for a moment. Is this like every occasion? Because like the quinceañera scene down here is very competitive for centerpieces. Like everybody wants to take it and you have to explain to them like, hey, that giant like clear cylinder that turns into a waterfall and fireworks shoot out of, like that stays at the venue. You can't take that one. Because like the centerpieces get crazy, but you'll take like no matter the occasion
if
the centerpiece is up for grabs.
I'll ask first. I'll make sure that it's okay to take, that it's not something that's going to be reused or like is being rented. But I'll definitely take the flowers home. In fact, my best friend got married last winter and I took a huge thing of flowers home and I made a little shadow box with her and her husband's name on it and I gave it to her for a present afterwards. I used her own flowers that she paid for.
You regifted the flowers back to her?
What's a shadow box?
Nice. It's like
shadow boxing is like it's rocky.
It's like a picture frame, but there's like 2 inches of depth to it. So it's like a box, but there's a glass so you can see through it. So you put the flowers inside of it and it's like a thing you can put on your wall.
I had an idea, Dan, for a show. I don't know if you're the person to pitch it to, but again, as we discussed earlier, I'm an idea man, not the execution man.
That's why nothing gets done around here.
I'm in charge of the ideas.
You're in charge of the execution of the ideas, but stop at the ideas.
No, I'm an idea man. So we were talking about extreme...
You're short of execution.
Just short of the execution department. He always stops.
That's why
he will not be in Buffalo, despite the initial enthusiasm
of
being in Buffalo.
He told us we could park in his driveway now, so that may be a game changer.
Really?
We'll see. Yeah, he said you could sleep in my driveway.
How close is he to the stadium?
TBD. We'll figure that out.
Okay, good.
So we were talking about extreme cheapskates, right? I think Jess might like this idea. So here's my idea. Ready? Metal Arc's first cooking show, Extreme Cheesecakes.
Good idea.
What are we doing with the cheesecakes?
Making them extreme.
How? Lighting them on fire?
He's an idea guy.
I'm an idea guy.
He doesn't have anything else.
That's the execution department.
Exactly.
He just got the name of the show. He doesn't have anything else. Mm-hmm. You have
Kildy's to. He's going to have to write the treatment for that.
I'll talk to John and Gary.
Yeah.
And
Bob. You'll
we'll
talk to Bob, Bob the engineer, and it won't get done. And it'll just be an idea, and it'll stay there. It's an idea. Metalark goes bankrupt on your
from
ideas.
From executive producer Bob.
From executive producer Bob. The idea from Billy.
Yes.
Just useless, fundamentally. The sentence that you uttered that you have to enjoy, and this happens all the time around here. The sentence, if you don't have any context for it, They've banned the throwing of rats.
Very confusing.
If you don't know what we're talking about, I got a tweet yesterday. Hey, guys, fully erect rhino penis just came over my speakers at work. Thanks.
To be fair, that wasn't our fault.
It was not. I mean, it is, in that we're airing this.
Ron is a freak.
Do we need to, like, we should come up with very specific disclaimers, like, before you begin. There is a discussion of animal anatomy that could potentially be graphic to our audience. Yeah, like, we should have, like, super specific disclaimers,
like,
after
warning.
Record.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. 15 seconds from now, Ron McGill is going to say blank. Right?
How do people, because we were talking about throwing things, you said, like, throwing the rats on the ice, obviously the Panthers ended up selling it. How do people get certain things in to throw on the ice or on the field of play at certain venues? Like, in Buffalo, we know that they throw things on the field from time to time. How do they throw octopi on the ice at hockey? Like, how do you sneak that in?
I would presume that first off,
I don't think they're sneaking it in. I think it's just one of those things you do at that venue.
You just proudly walk like with an octopus in hand?
I think they're handing them out.
They're not walking through the metal detector holding an octopus.
There's no way. You can't check.
With hockey, you can do it. I presume that you're getting an octopus, though, like on your shirt or on a jacket. Like, the wash that night could be unpleasant.
You probably put it in a Ziploc bag.
Exactly. So, I mean, in hockey, you put it in a Ziploc bag, you put it sort of underneath a zip-up jacket, you zip up the jacket, and you're only really getting examined with metal detection. So, I mean, it's the same with the sex objects that are used in Buffalo as well. Those wouldn't set off a metal detector either. So,
Billy, what do you do if you're at a hockey game and you're wearing a hat that you really like and someone has a hattie? Like, what do you do with your hat? Because everyone throws it on the ice. It happened to be at an Islander game, and I didn't throw my hat on the ice.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you judged? I usually sit, like, too far that my hat won't reach the ice, so that there's not the expectation that I will do that.
Right.
But I have wondered about that. So you've experienced the hattie before, but you haven't thrown it on.
You either have to wear a bad hat or bring a backup hat. You know, a hat you don't care about and throw that hat on the ice.
Oh, the old,
you know,
switcheroo, like Wrigley, like in the bleachers with the ball.
Yeah, yeah. These are important things, Dan. We got to figure them out.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Score major comfort with the new Hanes Originals Super Soft Styles. Imagine this. Fabric so soft, it feels like you're practically wearing nothing. Now that's next level softness. Whether you're storming the court, conquering the workday, or just chilling on the couch, Hanes Originals Super Soft Styles have you covered, literally, in soft, cooling comfort. And let's not forget the style. These sleek designs and colors won't just keep you feeling great, they'll have you looking like a champion. So ditch the discomfort and upgrade your game with the new Hanes Originals Super Soft Styles. They're soft, they're cooling, they're everything. Try Hanes' softest fabric ever at hanes.com/originals. Use discount code DANLB20.
Don Levitard.
The alley has a bad reputation in general, right?
It does.
Throughout American history.
Yeah. But on South Beach, someone's always just sitting somewhere smoking a cigarette. You can't go down an alley around here and not see someone sitting there smoking a cigarette.
It retains a pulsating heat from the night before.
You walk by some liquid that you're like, is that water? It didn't rain last night. That's definitely not water.
Avoid the liquid. Always avoid the liquids in an alley.
Stugatz.
I venture a guess that if you were to rake your tongue on the asphalt of an alley, you would die immediately.
Wow. I don't think it would be immediately, though. First, you'd contract very quickly, right before death, several sexual diseases, and then you would die.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
You mentioned hats, and we have not yet met, we have not yet talked about somehow this week the giant hat of Brian Robinson. Did you see the giant hat of Brian Robinson?
No.
Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
I don't know who you're talking about.
Okay. About par for the course. Yeah, it's about par for the course.
I mean, this is just... a starting running back for the Washington Commanders.
He is. I thought it was Antonio Gibson. I mean,
they share the responsibilities, but I mean, Robinson had a fairly noteworthy story before
Thunder
the year.
And Lightning?
I mean, he was shot.
He was shot before the season.
Oh, that guy, yes. Yeah. Good player. Yes.
Good player.
The guy who was shot.
Now he's in the business of selling hats.
Yeah. Big hats.
Giant hats. It's hard to
explain. Can you Google it so you know what we're talking about?
Well, but let's explain to the audience that has not seen it. The hat, it's a baseball cap that is about, what, five times the size of a normal baseball cap?
It's more than that. It's got to be like 50 times the size. It's huge. Is there a little hat inside of it that's on his head? I don't understand the mechanics of it.
It looks like a hat that belongs on the head of a mascot.
Oh,
right.
Mrs. Metz hat.
It looks, you know, like those things on Twitter where someone would be like, I'm gonna Photoshop the size of this thing bigger every day until X happens.
Like when Kyle Kuzma wore that sweater and then people Photoshopped it and made it even bigger of a sweater.
Right. And like you do it, I think there's someone who's been putting like a kid's character. I forget exactly. Is it Paddington Bear? Does that sound right? Into a movie, has been photoshopping Paddington Bear into a movie every day for like 330 straight days.
Yes,
and so
I have
like,
seen this.
So like this is a thing, and it honestly seems like day 57 of photoshopping a hat bigger, except it's actually a hat that he's wearing on his head. And he said after the game, when asked about it, I know the person who's selling these. I can give you their information if you want it. So he was hawking a product, which was a comically oversized hat.
That person has to have sold out of giant hats, right?
It looked like a prop, though. It didn't look like something you would ever wear.
It looked like in Scary Movie 3 when the sheriff gets in the car and her hat starts getting bigger, and then every time they cut back to her, the hat is bigger, and then she can't close the door because the hat's too big.
Since he wore the hat, they've had a 2,000% increase in sales. Like, it's
but
crazy.
But if you're buying that hat because you saw Brian Robinson wear it, like, when are you going to wear that? How are you going to wear that?
Well, they have
Why
hats.
Are you going to wear
They have
that?
Hats for every occasion at Noggin Boss. They were on Shark Tank. They have USA hats. So if you want to get in the spirit for the World Cup.
An oversized one.
They were on Shark Tank. I would love to see how that segment went. How did that segment
go? Well, someone invested. One of the sharks invested.
It's a terrible hat. I can't see anybody wearing
it. I feel like
that.
It would fit your head normally, though.
Oh. You want to play the game? How much is a Noggin Boss hat?
Yeah, I'll guess. A normal hat probably goes for 30. I think for the novelty, I'm going to guess $37 for a Noggin Boss.
I'm going to go 55.
Okay, Stugatz.
I'm going to go 60.
Okay, Dan.
100 bucks.
It is $75 for a Noggin
what?
Boss.
Wow.
Yeah. Stugatz won?
Wow.
The only thing that would make me think that somebody would like, the only use I could imagine for it is like to protect you from rain.
Like an umbrella hat.
Right, exactly. It's like an umbrella hat.
Why are you so pragmatic?
But it is. It's about the size of an umbrella. It is about the surprise.
I'm trying to find the use for why anyone would wear this.
But that would be a good use, right? Like you would buy it for that.
No,
I
wouldn't.
Yes, you would.
It's not like a tall hat. So it's not like if you have tall hair, it's fitting you that way. It's a wide hat.
It's
if you have a giant, giant head.
No, but it has to have, like you said, like a hat within a hat. It's got to have like a thing that grips around your skull. Otherwise, it's just balancing on the top of your head. So there's got to be something that upsets your hair.
I like that there's a section on their website that says our story as if it's something deeper than we wanted to make silly hats.
What is their story?
No, there has to be a story.
Well, their story is founded in 2019. Noggin Boss was formed by two best friends who love all things faith, family, sports, business, and charity. Sean and Gabe are former college athletes, club team coaches, and have a strong history of building successful businesses. They saw an opportunity to create something fun and innovative to help you promote things you love and are passionate about. That's the whole story.
This is so American. It's like, oh, you guys have hats in Europe? We have giant hats.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ours
are bigger.
We need to ship 3,000 of these to Qatar for the U.S.-Netherlands game on Saturday. We need all the American fans there wearing giant hats.
But Damon John is like a fashion mogul, right? Like he is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was the founder of FUBU.
He thought it was a good idea. He has 30% of the company now. He invested in this company.
How much equity? Like how much did he pay for, though? I need to know the...
50,000.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
We need to normalize, and this is going to sound horrible, and I acknowledge that on the front end. We need to normalize the idea of championship noggin bosses so that we have the losing team's hats made and then sent somewhere off into the distance where it's like, here's a hat that's comically large for a team that didn't win anything ever.
To wear with your...
like the 2022 Cincinnati Bengals Super Bowl winning noggin bosses.
Yeah, like you find it at Goodwill or something. That'd be awesome.
Find it at a thrift store somewhere.
Yeah. But we need to get the champions to wear it. So like this year, like Robert Kraft is wearing one when the Patriots inevitably win the Super Bowl again.
I like the idea of the losing hats ending up on extreme cheap skates because that's where they found them in the thrift stores.
But the guy's using it as like a mixing bowl.
I was going to say, or a bathtub. He's using secondary use.
Where he stores his used toothpaste.
Serving guacamole at his Super Bowl party out of the noggin box.
No, this would be a paella. It's so large. It's not guacamole. That's an enormous amount of guacamole.
Paella. I love the visual of that.
There are a couple of refereeing stories, Stugatz, that I wanted to get to. One better than the other. DK Metcalf was complaining about a pass interference call and got caught. He got fined $30,000 for complaining to a referee asking him, was that pass interference? And the referee's response was, did I throw a flag?
That's the proper response.
Which might have pissed off DK Metcalf, who's risking his body and head.
Did you not see this yellow thing that I threw?
I understand the arrogance. Probably DK Metcalf could have done without the arrogance of that. But this one's even better. Tony Brothers, have you seen this story? Because we didn't talk about it a couple of weeks ago when it happened. Spencer Dinwiddie accused Tony Brothers of calling him a b-ass mother, and he did it in a press conference. And Mark Stein is reporting, because there has not been an announcement from the league on this since Dinwiddie leveled the accusation. Mark Stein is reporting that Tony Brothers has been suspended for one game, but the league has not announced that Tony Brothers has been suspended for one game. Do you want to take a guess at anything that's happening there? Do you want to make any kind of suppositions based on the information that I've given you so far?
I think what's happening there is, well, imagine if Dinwiddie said that to Tony Brothers. Like, I think they're having trouble with the referee saying it to the player, because I'm certain that referee has been called a lot worse by players. And there isn't a lot worse than what it is that he said. But I'm certain players have called referees a lot worse and not been suspended. And so my guess is they're trying to figure out how to handle this, because it doesn't seem fair to suspend a referee but not suspend the player.
Well, you can't really do this as a referee. You can't. I mean, it's
bad. You shouldn't do it as a player either.
You shouldn't do did I throw a flag as sarcasm, and you can't elevate it to b-ass motherfucker when you're a judge and arbiter representing the league. But this is where it gets thorny and interesting, because you're wrong about everything.
Thanks.
He has been suspended for one game, but the reason, according to Mark Stein, that the league did not announce it is because he has been suspended with pay, and they announce it when you're suspended without pay. So for calling Spencer Dinwiddie a b-ass motherfucker, Tony Brothers has been rewarded with a vacation day.
Got a night off. Paid.
Is that why you just said it three times?
Yeah.
You want to take a couple vacation days too?
What is that?
I was way off.
What is that?
Well, the referees have a CBA, don't they?
Yeah, they have a union.
No, I understand. He's protected by the union, and that's the reason that he hasn't gotten suspended without pay. But I'm saying, what, like, in what world? Like all of that, how you're there to officiate a game.
That's excessive, but the flag thing is funny. Like, can't referees have fun once in a while? Why can't they have some fun once in a while? Hey, was that a pass interference? Did you see the flag? That's a funny response. Benign, funny response.
But Stu, I mean, we had an argument a couple weeks ago about Mike Evans getting golf tips from a referee, and you said the referees have to completely disassociate themselves.
Well, that's different. That's having a relationship with a player. That is not good. That's a conflict of interest. Just being humorous and saying, hey, you're asking me if that was a penalty. Did you see the flag? Funny. Normal response.
But I think the overall point is that people want their referees, or I guess sort of the overall vision of the job is that they are emotionless robots that are merely there to arbitrate the game and are not meant to insert their own viewpoints about anything, to insert their humanity, really, about anything.
Yeah, but think about what Metcalf is doing in that spot. He's questioning that guy's judgment. He is a professional referee. He saw pass interference. He's not asking.
Literally every play.
It comes off as a question from DK Metcalf. He knew what he was doing there. He's questioning the referee.
I mean, how many times have we seen a DB celebrate the coverage that he did, realize there's a flag down in the field, and then have a go at the referee? I mean, that happens 100 times a game. So the idea that, you know, you're basically trying to make a sort of exception here. And I understand that there's sort of humanity involved in dealing with coaches and dealing with players. And that's a very difficult balance because you're getting yelled at and you have to sort of try and cool the situation while also not escalating again your own humanity into the situation. But yeah, I mean, as it relates to Tony Brothers, I mean, that's a pretty serial offense. Like, your job is to stand there and take it, right? Like, that's the gig. The gig is that every single person on the court is going to yell at you, and your most kind of elevated response can be, I disagree, or let me put forward...
You can eject them. You can...
Technical fouls. In terms of a verbal response.
But these are separate stories, like, in my mind, at least, completely. You have a guy who's being questioned who says, hey, did you see the flag, right? It's benign, it's harmless, okay? Brothers absolutely took it too far. I'm agreeing with you there. But a referee, and there's a big difference between asking for golf tips and you saying, hey, did you see the flag that I threw?
But Stugatz,
you're asking for golf tips.
Let's make it this way. If you want to work so hard to see the humanity in the referee having fun, let's see the humanity in DK Metcalf not having fun before we get to your top five list of guys with great bodies that you thought would be better than they are in sports. Because DK Metcalf is somebody who's excellent, and doing that job is hard, and he works hard at his body and his craft, and he cares. And I'm just curious, at the height of anger, trying to do your job well, if you think you've been wronged and you go to the official, because he's been fined $30,000 for the way he argued with the referee. Right. And my guess is emotions escalated when he was met with a referee who was sarcastic. My guess is if you were at the height of rage trying to do your job well and thought you'd been wrong and you go to complain about it and the response is a sarcastic, did you see a flag?
But he met sarcasm with sarcasm. Like, DK Metcalf knew that it was a penalty in the eyes of the referee and he's still questioning sarcasm. Hey, that was a penalty? Yeah, I threw the flag.
No, it wasn't a penalty. He was calling for a pass interference, and the referee was saying he didn't throw a flag. Did you see a flag?
Right. So to your point, like, you're trying to do your job. You're trying to do it to the best of your abilities, and you have a guy who's exasperating the situation by being sarcastic.
Exacerbating.
I said it wrong?
Well, you said he was exasperated, but he was exacerbating the situation. Yes, he's angry. He's trying to do his job well, and the response is sarcasm. And I'm just wondering how you would respond if you were furious at somebody trying to do your job exceptionally. You thought you had been wrong. You're right that they're different, vastly different situations, but Metcalf has been fined $30,000. It's not an insignificant amount of money. And I'm just sort of explaining to you how it escalates and asking you whether the referee should be involved in escalating it. Because I expect my referees to not be. Yes, Tony Brothers is certainly escalating the situation.
No question about it. We agree there. Man, this is tough. And he got fined 30 and Brothers got a vacation. I mean...
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.